How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Rosebrough, Jonathan Fisk, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The Dred Scott decision by the U.S. Supreme Court is considered landmark for a number of reasons, not most of which are not good. At the very least, what the court did there was decide that it was going to have the power to decide things that had, up until that point, been the purview solely of the legislature, of the representatives of the people. Are we facing another Dred Scott moment in the Supreme Court, as inevitably this court will be hearing some case that will decide for us all the final disposition, or at least for all intents and purposes, the final disposition of the question of same-sex marriage? Joining us to answer that question and for his thoughts on Notre Dame's legal challenge to the HHS contraception mandate, our regular guest, Dr. Robert George. He holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's co-author of the books What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense, and Embryo, a Defense of Human Life, and he's author of a recent blog post for First Things titled How Republicans Should Respond to a Supreme Court Marriage Ruling. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's really a pleasure to be back on the show.
Do you expect this Supreme Court to issue a Dred Scott-type decision on same-sex marriage?
I'm afraid I have to say that yes, I do, Todd. I expect the court, despite the fact that there's no warrant for doing this in the text or logic or history of the Constitution, still I expect the justices to hand down a decision imposing same-sex marriage on all the states. And that will be very much like the decision in Dred Scott against Sanford, not because same-sex marriage is like slavery, it's not, but because it represents the intrusion by the judiciary into an area where the Constitution allocates authority to the people and their elected representatives. It's a usurpation, what the American founders would have called a usurpation of power by the judiciary, which is exactly what the Supreme Court of the United States did in 1857 in Dred Scott against Sanford, the infamous case in which this court ruled that Congress lacks any authority to restrict or prohibit slavery in the federal territories.
So in that sense, I mean, I take it from your recent piece for First Things that had we not had Dred Scott, it would have not have there would have been less precedent for the famous Roe v. Wade decision. Could we just as well call it a Roe v. Wade type decision on the part
of the court? Exactly. Roe v. Wade represents exactly the same phenomenon, the same abuse, the same usurpation. There again, without any warrant in the text or logic or structure or original understanding of the Constitution, unelected, electorally unaccountable judges simply move in, seize authority that they don't have, and impose on the nation a resolution to a disputed, morally charged political question. Your listeners, I'm sure, don't need me to tell them that there's absolutely nothing in the Constitution about abortion, just as there's nothing in the Constitution about same-sex marriage, or marriage generally, for that matter. There is nothing in the Constitution that prohibited the national government from restricting slavery where it had general jurisdiction in the federal territories. The federal government could not prohibit or restrict slavery in states that chose to have it, but they could constitutionally permissibly restrict or prohibit slavery in the federal territories, because there the federal government did have plenary authority. So we have a historical pattern of judges in the Supreme Court, in particular, usurping the authority of the other branches of government, violating constitutional principle, rendering anti-constitutional principles that then, of course, political officials have to decide, elected officials have to decide what they will do about. In the case of Dred Scott against Sanford, Lincoln, President Lincoln, in his inaugural address on March 4th, 1861, talking precisely about the Dred Scott decision, simply said he would not treat the principle handed down by the justices in that case as binding on the national government and on as binding on him as president, and he refused to do it.
We'll take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Robert George on the Supreme Court and same-sex marriage.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is a giant poster of Luther's Small Catechism. It's perfect for display in your home, Christian day school, or Sunday school. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Small Catechism giant poster by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, the Small Catechism giant poster. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Supreme Court and same-sex marriage. A little bit later, Notre Dame's legal challenge to the HHS contraception mandate. Dr. Robert George is our guest. He holds a McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He co-authors the books What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense, and Embryo, a Defense of Human Life. And he's authored a recent blog post for First Things titled How Republicans Should Respond to a Supreme Court Marriage Ruling. You know, the world we live in today, as evidenced in our courts, as evidenced in the laws that are being passed, the things that have changed in the last 50 years, just last half century, display an increased, not just apathy, but antipathy in culture toward Christianity. And not just its morality, but essentially we must understand this to be an antipathy toward Christ himself and the saving message of the gospel. There's a place for your kids to go get a good education and a good Lutheran education as well, Bethany Lutheran College, where they will not remain unchallenged, but they will certainly be prepared for the challenge that will face them in the culture as Lutheran Christians. Find out more about Bethany Lutheran College, blc.edu, blc.edu, or give them a call toll-free, 1-800-944-3066, 800-944-3066, Bethany Lutheran College, Mankato, Minnesota. Dr. George, how would you respond to someone who suggests that the 14th Amendment, the so-called Equal Protection Clause, could be a legitimate basis for the court to make a decision on same-sex marriage, ruling essentially in favor of it?
That assumes something that is frankly crazy, which is that in 1868, without knowing it was doing so, without knowing they were doing so, without ever entertaining the issue or considering the possibility of the issue, the people of the United States, by amending their Constitution to include an equal protection clause, legalized or mandated the recognition of same-sex marriages. It's just for 150 years we haven't realized that we did that. They didn't know they were doing it. They didn't consider the question. It was not even debated. But they did it without knowing they were doing it. The trouble is, Todd, if you read the Equal Protection Clause in that open-ended way as an invitation to the judiciary to impose in the name of constitutional principle whatever idea about equality they happen to hold as individual people, then there is no limit to that. Judges can do anything in the name of equality or anything in the name of due process. And as Lincoln warned, when you empower judges or respect the claims of power of judges to do that kind of thing, to engage in that kind of jurisprudence, you give up Republican government. You abandon democracy. The people will have, and I quote Lincoln here directly, resigned their government into the hands of that eminent tribunal. In other words, government, not only for the people, but by the people, disappears. Now, do we want that? I say we don't. I stand with Lincoln. We must not accept the usurpation of our authority as the sovereign people, the authority of those representing us as our elected representatives who are accountable to us by the judicial branch.
How would you respond to someone who says, well, and this is admittedly a little more flimsy, the full faith and credit clause would at least provide a kind of logic for saying that what is legal in one state, in particular marriage, ought to be recognized and given the full faith and credit in every state. How would you respond to that line of reasoning?
Well, we don't have an historical precedent for that. We don't have an historical precedent for requiring every state to recognize as marriages what any state happens to recognize as a marriage, let's say polygamous marriages or polyamorous marriages or what have you. Notice what that would do if you accepted it, Todd. If you accepted it, that would mean that any state, any one individual state, Rhode Island, Montana, could effectively dictate marriage policy for the entire nation simply by changing the law in its state. I submit to you that if it were any other issue or some issue that liberals were not trying to change the law of the nation on, they would howl in protest at that idea that a state could dictate the law of the nation.
What will the courts logic, reasoning, likely be if they do hand down a Dred Scott-type same-sex marriage decision?
It will likely be an appeal to the principle of equality. It will be question-begging, of course, because it will require the addition of a premise that's not in the Constitution. It'll have to be smuggled in. The court will pretend not to be doing that, but of course it has to be doing that, because without that premise about the nature of marriage, the argument won't go through. So it will be assuming without saying that all marriage is sexual, romantic companionship or domestic partnership. And then it will say that opposite sex couples who are infertile, for example, because of infirmity, are in exactly the same position as same-sex couples. So if opposite-sex couples in that position are permitted to have their relationships recognized as marriage, then as a matter of equality, same-sex partners have a right to have their relationships recognized as marriages. The hidden premise, though, that is nowhere in the Constitution will be doing all the work, and that is the reduction of marriage to sexual romantic domestic partnership or companionship, as opposed to what marriage has historically been, which is technically is called a conjugal relationship. And by that we mean a relationship that is naturally ordered to and would be fulfilled by having and rearing children together, the type of relationship that is suitable, naturally apt for the rearing of children, even if in any particular case, due to, let's say, age or infirmity, children can't come into that marriage. When you think about it, here's what marriage is, and this is what gives the public an interest in marriage at all. The reason we recognize marriages in law and regulate marriages by law in a way that we don't, for example, recognize or get involved with, as a matter of public policy, baptisms or bar mitzvahs. Marriage is the bringing together of man and woman as husband and wife to be father and mother to any children who happen to be born of the union. And when you get men and women together for very long, anywhere, pretty soon you're going to start having babies. And marriage, when it's working, provides those children with the inestimable blessing of being brought up in the committed love, in the marital bond, of their biological progenitors, of their mom and their dad, conferring the additional gift on those children of being brought up with both maternal and paternal influences and care. Now, that's the public policy reason that states are interested in marriage at all. States, I mean, being governments, interested in marriage at all. After all, the government has no interest, or legitimate interest anyway, in our romantic lives, just as romantic lives, any more than government would have interest in baptisms or bar mitzvahs. The government interest is tied to the idea of marriage and to trying to ensure that as many children as possible, it'll never be perfect, but as many children as possible are indeed brought up in the committed bond uniting their mother and their father, because every baby has one of each. Not every marriage will produce babies, but every baby will have a mom and a dad.
Finally, on that particular subject, what role is Justice Anthony Kennedy likely to play in any decision that the Supreme Court
will be the swing. He will be the swing voter. And as much as I hope I'm wrong about this, I think he will be the fifth vote that will impose on the nation same-sex marriage under the pretext of enforcing the Equal Protection Guarantee. It looks from all the signals as if four votes clearly favor that. Four justices clearly favor that resolution for their own, you know, political or moral reasons. Four justices, those that I regard as the constitutionalists on the court, not only in this case but more generally, will understand and take the position that the Constitution does not dictate a definition of marriage for the entire nation. The matter is left to the states. The states, absent a constitutional amendment to the contrary, are free to define marriage as they judge to be best. That will leave Justice Kennedy as the swing voter, and while I hope he swings over to the constitutionalist side, the signals from him, alas, are that he intends to swing the other way.
On another subject, the Supreme Court has sent back down or effectively sent back down Notre Dame's lawsuit against the HHS mandate. Can you explain the situation to us legally and then give us your thoughts?
What's happening there is the Supreme Court's doing the right thing. Again, it's enforcing a decision that was a close call between the two wings of the court. But on that one, Justice Kennedy swung the right way. And it's not a constitutional question, Todd. It's a statutory interpretation question, interpreting the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which requires that governments respect people's religious freedom and not impose on their consciences to do something that they believe is wrong unless they are required to by a compelling state interest, and they're prosecuting or advancing that interest by the least restrictive or intrusive means. That was the decision in the Hobby Lobby case. What you have in the Notre Dame situation is a lower court, the Circuit Court of Appeals, that handled the Notre Dame case is simply out of whack with the Hobby Lobby decision. And so it is attempting to impose or permit the government to impose on Notre Dame, the federal government, the Health and Human Services Department, to impose on Notre Dame a mandate that's contrary to the conscience of the university as a Catholic institution. And essentially what the Supreme Court has now done is remanded the case to that court, saying, fix this so that you get in line with our decision in Hobby Lobby and relieve Notre Dame of its obligations under this mandate, because imposing those obligations is a violation of the university's rights under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's not a big deal. The big deal was the decision in Hobby Lobby in the first place. This is simply requiring a particular district that's out of line with the Hobby Lobby decision to get in line with it.
Finally, then, are these two subjects that we've discussed, in essence, same-sex marriage and religious freedom, likely to find themselves together before the court at any time in the future?
Well, yes. You're going to have a whole lot of issues arising out of the imposition of same-sex marriage. The rights, for example, of photographers who, as a matter of conscience, say because they're Catholics or Missouri Synod Lutherans or Orthodox Jews or evangelical Protestants, photographers who cannot in conscience contribute their artistic talent to celebrating a same-sex partnership, will be sued or prosecuted under anti-discrimination laws and will then invoke their religious freedom rights. This will be, for the most part, under state RFRA, state Religious Freedom Restoration Acts. But there could be circumstances in which these things would arise under federal law in federal territories like Washington, D.C., for example. And so we could find the state Supreme Courts and the Supreme Court of the United States handling those questions. And, of course, it's not just photographers. It's Knights of Columbus or churches that make halls available for weddings. We have a case like that in New Jersey called the Ocean Grove case, Methodist case. It's bakers, it's florists, it's anyone who provides services. We have a couple who are ministers of the gospel, Protestant ministers in Idaho, who do weddings. They have a little business, but it's a religious business. They do weddings in their chapel, and they're now being compelled under anti-discrimination laws to make their services as ministers or their chapel available to same-sex partners, which they couldn't possibly do in conformity with their consciences. So they have no choice but to say no to that. Now the question is, will they be driven out of business or made bankrupt by the imposition of anti-discrimination laws, or will their rights to religious freedom be respected? So we're going to see more and more and more of this all over the country.
Dr. Robert George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's co-author of the books What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense, and Embryo, a Defense of Human Life, and he's author of a recent blog post for First Things titled How Republicans Should Respond to a Supreme Court Marriage Ruling. You'll find a link to his column and Dr. George's books at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. George, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
When we come back, we'll take up Christ in the Old Testament, our weekly series with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We'll be in Numbers chapter 121, the familiar story of the serpent on the pole. Stay tuned.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of Issues Etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans. Issues Etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.